succulently seditious sounds from the funky flaccid fiend bone of liberty. We give you a crypto chiropractic crack to strengthen your spine against the roving wiretaps of tyranny. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 Kelvins. Just keep a sin flood of sadism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Jeremy? Can you feel it?
Oh yeah, I can feel it.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a Bitcoin no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at bipcot.org. So, how are you doing, Jeremy?
Oh, just groovy, Phil. Just groovy. How are you this evening?
I have been doing pretty well. There's some decently amusing news in hitting the Facebook today, and I've been enjoying this more or less. Also, House of Cards just came out with a new season, and I'm looking forward to that.
Oh yeah, that's another one of those shows that's on my list of shows to watch someday, and I still haven't.
Yeah, it's it was one of Obama's few very candid moments when he stated, you know that show House of Cards? That's pretty accurate about how things work in Washington.
Yeah, I remember him saying that. And from all accounts I've heard of the show, that's a pretty accurate statement, yes. So I'm a huge, actually a huge fan of Kevin Spacey, so I'm surprised that I haven't gotten around to it yet, but it just sits there piling up, just like all the books that I keep saying that I'm going to read and never get to because, life gets in the way constantly.
Yeah, I have a few of those too, or maybe a few hundred of those.
Yeah, well.
So I have something to complain about, and I suspect that you have some additional things to complain about, the same thing. So if you don't mind, I'm going to complain a little bit about government regulations. I know that's not something we do very often here on The Fiends.
Oh, no, this is almost taboo territory, man. Be careful with this,
I know, right? But so I've been on a fitness kick lately, and with a fitness kick comes a certain level of soreness in the muscles. So I decided to go and try this CBD oil. It's something that I've never really tried before, in order to sort of soothe my aching muscles. But the problem with CBD topicals and CBD oils, CBD, sorry, is that it's kind of, you're never really quite sure if you're getting a good thing or not, unless you know what brand to go for. Because there are some that have a bad combination of THC versus CBD, or maybe not even any CBD. And for those who don't know, as far as my understanding, you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but CBDs are really the more physically therapeutic aspect of cannabis.
Yes, generally speaking.
Yeah, right, exactly. So the issue is that when you go to the counter, they can't, and I think this is actually a legal thing, they cannot tell you what is better for what, or they can't make any recommendations for what is useful for what purpose. So I actually went to the counter at a local shop and I said, do you have anything that I can use, a topical for muscle soreness? And they told me, well, we can't actually suggest anything for that, but here are the brands of topicals we have. And the problem here is that if you can't get a specific recommendation for something, you have to rely on, word of mouth. And if you don't know enough people that really know what brands to steer you towards, then you really don't know what you're getting. You don't know what to go for. So you can end up wasting money on something that's completely useless. Or even worse, you can end up doing that and completely be turned off of something that could be more therapeutic than you actually realize. Now, CBD oil has different effect for different people, so it doesn't really work on everybody anyway. But it could be, you could run into this situation where it would work for you if you got the right brand, but you didn't get the right brand. So what you got is useless. Now you are completely cut off from an avenue that can help quite a bit with relief of pain or other issues that it might help.
Yeah, well, thanks, government. Well, no, I get what you're saying. And of course, that makes sense because, yeah, if especially because it is, it's still a, it's a relatively new thing. So it's still kind of a crapshoot at times. I know that, you know, I mean, I think I might have talked about it on the show before, but I've had my own experiences with CBD. And, you know, because both one of my daughters and my ex are both on it for different conditions, which has been helpful, but we went through a lot of the same problems originally because even though they, you know, have finally, quote unquote, legalized medical marijuana here in New York, and CBD oil was supposed to come along with that and, you know, supposed to make it less difficult to purchase, they still make you jump through all these hoops. And it's the same type of thing. Like, even the doctors are hesitant to say, you know, they can't recommend things. They, you know, they can give you ideas about things, but you don't know. And, you know, like you said, if it's something that you try one and that one doesn't work, I mean, it does kind of work the same way as THC in that regard with regular cannabis. You know, if you get a strain of something that isn't that strong and you try it and it doesn't give you the result that you wanted, then you may just say, well, this just isn't going to work at all. Now I need to find something else to solve my problem. And then you go off in a completely different direction. And it's just a matter of you got the wrong, like you said, you got the wrong product. And, you know, you may, even if it was just like the not the right strength and it didn't do enough for you, and then you go searching for something completely different when all you had to do was try something else. But this stuff isn't cheap either. So I can understand not wanting to make a mistake in that regard. Like even like the little bottles I get for my one daughter, it's, you know, like $35 a pop. That's not cheap, you know. So I want to make sure that it's useful before I go ahead messing with that stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, a lot of people might say something like, well, you can just look at the levels, you know, those things with higher CBD levels, that's going to be what's going to help you. But that's not actually telling. So I've seen a few articles on this, people talking about it, even with recreational cannabis, a lot of people just go for the highest THC level and say, well, that's going to give me the best effect because it's got the most THC. Well, that's not true because there are other factors there. Yeah. There's the mixture of the THC and the CBD oils, and there are other contents in the flower or whatever you're buying that will affect the high that the cannabis gives you, whatever the THC is. Similarly, if you're looking at CBD topicals or CDB or CBD oils, that it's the same thing. There may be an interaction with just a little bit of a small percentage of THC that actually enhances the effect of the CBD topical of the therapeutic use, or there may be some other interacting chemicals in the rub that also affect how effective it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course your own physiology has a lot to do with it too, you know, because like you said, it does affect people, you know, regardless of what you're talking about, whether it's cannabis, CBD or anything like this, you know, it affects people differently. So you don't know. And, you know, like I said, from a monetary aspect, it's not something you want to be just testing out and going, oh, we'll try this one. Oh, that doesn't work. Oh, we'll try this one instead. It's just you're throwing money down the drain at that point. And, you know, like the one thing you said about if you don't have your own community of people to turn to and ask for advice, that's very important, too, because especially in these areas where stuff like this is finally becoming available or finally becoming, quote unquote, legal, you know, there's so many people that don't have anybody to turn to. So how are they supposed to get how are they supposed to gain this knowledge? You know, we talk about how things like how the reputation system at Amazon and stuff like that is the type of things that we would like to see in the future to replace government, a lot of aspects, you know, that Yelp kind of world where it's like, you know, we're relying on word of mouth is not such a bad thing, but you need people that you can, whose mouths you can trust in order to get to that point first. If you're just hearing from, you know, some random people here or there, maybe you're not going to trust that. But if you have like an onslaught of people all saying the same thing or giving their own, you know, positive stories, that's a little different. But when there's only a couple people you can turn to, yeah, how are you supposed to know? without just trying it out. And you know, like I said, that's for, I'm sure for a lot of people, the money thing is a big thing. It's you can't afford to do that to yourself.
Right. So. Absolutely. I mean, and if you need a topical or some sort of treatment, a $30 treatment that turns out to be useless, well, now you've gone to $60 for a single treatment. And what if that one ends up being useless? The second one you bought for $30. Well, now you have to buy another one for $30. That's $90 just to get your first treatment that actually works, assuming that third treatment still actually does work. So that's a huge incentive to not get medicine, frankly, or at least not get some sort of something that will help you with whatever pain you might be feeling. And CBD topicals, these things aren't for getting high. They're not going to do, anybody that buys a CBD topical to get high is an idiot, because it's not going to do anything. All it is for these physically therapeutic usages. So, and we can even take it a step up with aspirin. This is a similar thing that happened with aspirin with Bayer. For a while, Bayer, and I don't even know if this has changed or not, but for the longest time, Bayer was not allowed to advertise that aspirin has positive effects on the heart and on the I'm totally brain farting on the body system there, the circulatory system or whatever. Yeah. But yeah. But it has positive effects on the heart and blood flow and everything. Bayer couldn't advertise that because it wasn't necessarily proven in proper government funded or government supported studies, even though every doctor pretty much knew it to be true that aspirin had a positive outcome for or it helps heart patients. So doctors were even suggesting that patients maybe start taking aspirin every day in order to work on their blood flow and their heart and everything. But if you can't actually convey that information, that actually has real effects on people's lives. People could die by not knowing that. And of course, I know that's a little extreme, but it's a negative effect.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hi there. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Purse.io is a great website where you can spend Bitcoin on Amazon or trade Amazon gift cards for Bitcoin. I use Purse myself and I love it. You can also get discounts on Amazon. You can get 5% right this minute, or if you place your order and wait a day or so, you can name your discount and get 10%, 20%, even up to 33% off. You can try Purse right now and get 0.01 Bitcoin free after you complete your first order over $50. And if you go through the Freedom Fiends link, Purse will also send 0.01 Bitcoin to the Freedom Fiends. Help yourself to some agorism and help Liberty Media while you're at it. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Purse link at the top right, even if you've used Purse before. Or enter the referral code FIENDS when you sign up at purse.io. That's FIENDS. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. Do it.
Last segment, we're complaining about government and how they get in the way, which they are wont to do. But the other thing you had mentioned before we started our complaining session was the fun that was going on today with some of the interesting things in the news, like a random tweet from the current resident of the awful office last night that stayed around for a while. And became news because, well, that's how the news cycle works these days.
Yeah.
I still don't know why this is news, but for those that don't know, apparently the good old resident made a tweet last night in the middle of the night, which is normally, he normally tweets between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. Eastern time, it seems. That seems to be his prime time for tweeting. Always has been, even since before he became president. But last night he made some tweet that clearly was like not even a completed thought that he started. I don't even remember what the whole thing says, but what it appears that he was trying to spell was the word coverage. And it just, it was a typo and it came out. What was it? What did we decide it was? Kafifi? Is that what the poll that
there
you
was
saw?
Actually a poll. There was a poll on this on Fusion, and they had three different possible pronunciations. One was Kofif, one was Kofefe, and the winner with 43% of the vote was Kofifi.
Kofifi. So, yes, so he typed this word and then just left the tweet like that, which, you know, to me, looking at it, my first thought was, oh, I've done that plenty of times before. You start typing something and then you either forget that you're typing, or you get distracted by something and you put the phone down. And then when you pick it up again, you hit the screen and you don't realize, and you hit send and that goes out. And Twitter is the wonderful universe where there's no taking it back unless you delete the entire tweet, because you can't correct it like you can on other social media platforms once it's out. And apparently it sat there for 4 or 5 hours until he finally took it down. But in that time, in the Twitter sphere, you know, things take off in a hurry, and there was all this wild speculation about what he really meant, or what the meaning behind this was, and a lot of other people took advantage of it to make funny memes and stuff like that. And I get that. Like, I get making fun of this. You know, I'm all for making fun of politicians, regularly. and if he had said this, if he had misspoke, I could understand, you know, totally running with this. But this was clearly just a typo that he kind of forgot about. And then when he finally tweeted again at 6 a.m., it was something along the lines of, you know, whatever, you know, are we ever going to know what that word means? And then enjoy. So basically, you know, nodding his head to the fact that he made a mistake, or what, you know, and he's just going to let it sit out there because he knows that the media is going to run with this idiocy. Because one thing Trump is, I mean, I've said for the longest time, I don't think he's a brilliant man, but he's one heck of a marketer. And he knows how to use this type of stuff to his advantage. So he'll just sit back and laugh at all this. And everybody else is just, what's that?
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
I mean, he woke up in the morning and immediately trolled everybody.
Exactly.
So who can figure out the true meaning of Kofifi? Enjoy.
Well, yeah, there you go.
The funny thing is, even the people on it, one of the funniest things about the Trump administration is that Trump seems to be completely separate from Team Trump. Like, there's an entire team dedicated to Trump, but Trump's not on that team. And because there doesn't seem to be any communication, any actual meaningful communication between Trump and the team, including Sean Spicer. Sean Spicer is actually trying to push it off like he actually meant something about it. And maybe Sean Spicer is finally warmed up and he's starting to kind of go along with the trolling act. But he seems to, his quote is, the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant. Yeah, okay, sure. It was a butt tweet. And come on, by now, we all know that Trump's thing is butt tweeting. I mean, this isn't the first time he's butt tweeted.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't there a tweet a little while ago where it was basically like a cat walking on a keyboard that was from Trump?
I think so. I don't follow. I try to check in on his Twitter feed every once in a while, but I don't pay that much attention to it. Right. But I think I might have heard something about that. But yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, actually, that would be pretty funny if Spicer was getting in on the troll. I'd have to give him credit for that one too, because you could totally take it that way. But who knows? But I don't know, man. It's just sad what makes news these days and what gets people all excited.
Yeah, truth.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 5th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, starting Thursday, June 22nd, and going through Monday, June 26th. That's right, Liberty Fest is getting longer and stronger. There will be presentations, discussions, bacon duels, and outdoor activities in an environment that is both family and grown-up friendly. There will be special appearances by Jeffrey Tucker, Dana Martin, and a few of the Freedom Fiends. If you have only talked about what a free society would look like, this is your chance to live it and see it with your own eyes. Now round up your friends and family and get them registered today at mplfest.org. And there's a discount for paying with Bitcoin. That's mplfest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Phil, and in the last segment we were talking about the kerfuffle, I guess it was.
Kafifi the strong has been summoned.
the typo from Donald Trump that got everybody in a tizzy. And, you know, like I was saying in the last segment, I'm all for, you know, because I made a comment about this earlier and I got a lot of backlash from people who seem to take it personally, because I mentioned the fact that I find it fascinating that the masses, as they were, can get so easily distracted by some nonsense like this. And a few people who are self-described individualists took offense to this, which I kind of found funny, because I thought that those type of people would understand I wasn't referring to them, because, you know, I understand making jokes about things. I mean, heck, I make memes. I understand the humor and stuff like this. But when you can take something like this, which was like you were saying before, you know, literally what it equates to a butt dial, and make it this big of a thing, and it overtakes the news cycle for a day or two, it's the perfect opportunity for government to cram a bunch of other things down people's throats while they're not looking, because that's how government operates, you know? And they take advantage of situations like this, you know, whether things are done by design or they take advantage of situations that arise, you know, that's how false flag type things happen, where they just sneak things in where nobody's paying attention, because, oh, here, look over here, oh yeah, Trump, he's such an idiot, let's look what he's doing over here and make fun of this. And then they'll slide some bill in that's just been sitting in somebody's desk forever just waiting for the perfect opportunity. So that's why it bothers me. I think people should be serious all the time, and people should, you know, be constantly be pointing out what the state's doing wrong and constantly be, you know, talking about freedom and stuff like this, which is what I got accused of. No, not at all. I believe everybody, because I think that I need this. So I kind of extend that courtesy to everybody, that everybody needs the opportunity to blow off steam from time to time and have fun and goof off. I'm all for that. But when it's stuff like this, especially when you're already in a situation where Idiocracy, the movie, is looking more and more like a documentary, why give more ammo to the apathetic out there who can now look and go, oh yes, our president really is an idiot. The bureaucracy really controls everything. Oh, there's literally nothing we can do. So let's just laugh along. And then it's just going to get worse. So I don't know. That's where I look at it. That's why it agitated me so much, because that's how I'm looking at it. That it's just, it's so silly. Yes, but you can, if you make it a big deal, well, then people who call them government have a really big bad history of taking advantage of you making a big deal of silly stuff like this.
Yeah. Well, I've been thoroughly enjoying all of the jokes that have been coming out of this. And where it gets me is when people are actually really making a big deal. Like most of the, you know, most of the anarchists that we know are just kind of, they're enjoying it for what it is. It's a big joke. You know, they're making memes about it. They're making different, you know, additional jokes about it, and just having fun. But a lot of the news outlets, well, some of the news outlets, specifically, particularly directionally leaning news outlets are acting like right, are acting like it's some final word on the state of the presidency. You know, this is all you need to know about President Trump. This represents his whole presidency and how, you know, he watches 5 hours of TV a day and tweets at night and he's just terrible. And it's all consolidated into this Covfefe statement. And really, really, that's your takeaway from this? A butt dial, and you're going to call it his entire presidency? Now, don't get me wrong. He's a president, and therefore he is a horrible president. Every president since Washington has been worse than the president before him. But, I mean, come on. Lighten up. And it's the same thing, and this is so clearly visible. They don't even try to hide it. Everything out of Obama's mouth was pure gold to all of the news outlets, it seemed. And everything out of Trump's mouth is a purely browner colored object. And at the very least, they're making themselves very obvious and very transparent, as if they haven't already. But
yeah. Well, I mean, that's nothing. It's, well, it should be apparent by this point, you would think. Unfortunately, it's not for so many people, which is sad, because it's not like it's anything new. You know, they did the same thing with Bush before Obama, although Bush did make a lot more funnier, even funnier statements than Trump. As far as I'm concerned, Bush still had a lot of winners over some of the things, because Trump says some crazy things, but not all the things he says are, you know, Bush level crazy.
Keep in mind, he's still got a good 7 and some change years to go. Bush has a whole 8 years of ammo that we have to play with.
This is true. Well, that's actually that's something funny too. I've been cramming in so many podcasts lately. I can't remember where I heard this because I fell behind for a little while. So I've been trying to catch up and listening more often than I normally do. But I was listening to some podcasts and they were playing clips of Bush from back when he was governor and then when he was president. And it was like he was a totally different guy.
Oh yeah, night and day.
Like night he actually day. Made sense when he was making pitches as the governor, especially when he was running for, I guess it was running for re-election, or maybe it was the first time he was running for governor. I don't remember. But like listening to him was like, oh my God, this is an intelligent man who you know understands the system and is talking about, you know, solving problems and stuff. And then fast forward to halfway through his presidency, and he's stumbling over his words, and he's like making up words on the spot, and like. It's like, oh yeah. My God, it's like he was lobotomized. What the heck happened?
Well, it's like Roger Stone got a hold of him for the presidential election cycle and he said, hey man, you know, you sound too smart, you gotta dumb it down, and he just took it too far. And I don't know if you'll notice, but the George W. Bush throughout his career and Donald Trump have very similar lips. The way they shape their lips when they talk, they both have that weird puckering thing, and I'm wondering how much Roger Stone. So Roger Stone is a political strategist on election campaigns and stuff like that. He's total. He's on GCN now actually. So, but he
yes,
worked
he has a label
with both
of ours.
Was right. So, but he worked with both George Bush and Donald Trump, and he is. Despite some character issues you may have with him, he is a genius in political strategy. And I'm relatively sure he's worked with both George W. Bush and Donald Trump. And I'm wondering if he's part of why they kind of developed this little, you know, puckered up, flamboyantly ignorant air about them.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, that's interesting. We talked about Roger Stone the other night when we discussed the documentary that's out right now. Get Me Roger Stone. Right. which I found fascinating, because like you said, it was, you know, I've heard the stories about the guy, and then you watch it and I got angrier and angrier, but then at the end it was like, well, he is really, really good at what he does. It's really hard to deny that. But now I'm trying to remember Trump before all this, and trying to remember if I can picture him making those faces, and I want to say that I do, but he also has known Roger Stone forever. Like, they've been connected since the 80s, I think, early 80s.
Oh yeah.
So it's quite possible that he picked it up. I mean, heck, some people may say that sounds crazy, but it, you know, why? I mean, if you look at it from the other side of the quote unquote aisle, I mean, how many of the Democrats have come out that speak exactly the same? Because there's that style of speech that Bill Clinton used that's actually taught now as a way to disarm people. Because Obama, I remember people remarking a lot about that when Obama first came up, that he had that same style too. It's something that's kind of taught on the Democrat side of how to engage the public and make it almost like sing-songy, and, you know, kind of lull the people into that sense of trust and stuff like that.
Yeah. So you have to shape your hand just perfectly, cradle your thumb into your forefinger just in those two joints, and, you know, drive it home with the fist pointing forward. Yeah. Every time you make a point.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, like I said, it sounds kind of crazy, but it's not. I mean, there are these type of people out there. That's what their job is. It's these image consultants, and that's basically what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all staged. Almost everything that, if not everything, well, everything other than the gaps that happens in the public eye by politicians, it is all planned and all staged. They are actors. And I don't even mean that figuratively or analogously. They are actors. That's what they do. It's like that saying, I think this was actually mentioned by Roger Stone, that politics is just theater for ugly people. And
I was going to say that. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all a big show. And fortunately, I think most of America is sort of wising up to this. And that's one thing that you kind of got to give to Roger Stone, actually, and Trump, is they have really kind of laid bare the ridiculousness and the idiocy of American politics, just how much of a show it is, how much of reality television it is, and how completely illegitimate it is. They've basically turned American politics into what it is, a big clown show.
Well, yeah, and I'm thankful for that in one regard, because, you know, like you said, I mean, I hope more people are realizing that, but my fear, unfortunately, is that people become apathetic because of that, instead of wanting to actually do something to kind of like push it over the edge. They just kind of, right. You know, more and more people realize that it's like, well, this is just the way it is. I guess there's nothing we could do about it, you know, and that doesn't get us anywhere closer to freedom. So
worms.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media is not easy, but it is effective. Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media doesn't even pay very much at all. Sometimes we even have to pay out of our own pockets. But we do it because we have to. For you. And for the children. Here at the Freedom Fiends, we've been producing amazing and effective Liberty Media every day since 2011. Radio shows, podcasts, movies, music, cryptocurrencies, and yes, even memes. The Freedom Fiends also run the world's only Liberty Media Teaching Hospital and the world's only voluntarist media university. Our hands-on classes educate and shape hundreds of the great Liberty speakers of today and tomorrow, and they, in turn, will teach and inspire others. Heck, even the ones who got fired or quit in a huff still hold useful skills and equipment to hone their own Liberty Media and teach others. Freedom Fiends Media and our students' media is a rising groundswell to help create happy Liberty lives around the world, and maybe even on to Alpha Centauri. Kitty cats and puppies like living in Liberty homes more than in statist homes. So please donate to the Freedom Fiends, if only for the kitties. Hashtag please donate Freedom Fiends, think of the kitties.
Let's see, what else do we have going on in the news lately? There's some other news with Trumpykins, right? But it involves somebody doing some horrible things that scared his child, I think. That was
scared his child?
Yeah, apparently Trump got really mad. Before I bury the lead, what's her name? Kathy Griffin? Comedian, I guess she's considered. I never found her very funny, but
that's the stupidest thing. All of the female actresses in Hollywood are trying to get rid of the term actress because it's gendered and be called actors. And I say all hyperbolically, obviously it's not all, but then we want to add the term comedienne to have a gendered comedian term. It's self-contradicting much, Hollywood folks? Anyway, well, continue. Yeah.
Yes. Well, anyway, she, who I guess is best known these days for doing the New Year's Eve show with, as I learned recently, because I wasn't aware of this, Phil taught me this during the break, was doing the New Year's Eve shows for CNN. She was doing some photo shoot, and I don't even know the full story behind it, but there's one photo that got out of her holding a severed Donald Trump head. And I saw some quote by her saying that she even mentioned the fact that if this particular photo got out, she's sure she may have to move to Mexico or something, because, you know, so many people would hate her. But the picture did get out, and Trump tweeted something about the fact that his kids, especially his youngest son Barron, were greatly affected by this, by seeing this image of this woman holding their father's severed head. And of course she had to trot out there and make an apology and say something along the lines she went too far, and she was really sorry, and she hoped people could forgive her. And that just angered me. That angered me even more. I hate when people have to, these celebrities and stuff, run out there with these, you know, not so contrite apologies because they have to stem the PR, you know, to stem the PR storm. And it's like, well, isn't this a free speech issue? That, you know, usually people are, you know, when it's convenient for them, they want to stand up for, like, why isn't this the type of stuff that's supposed to be, you know, supposed to be protected? Why would you have to apologize for that? I don't understand that.
Well, I mean, I don't think any legal repercussions were on the horizon against her, were there? Because that would be the free speech issue. But I mean, I actually agree that it was in poor taste. I don't really care, but I don't think anybody was actually threatening legal action. I mean, if people were threatening violence on her, that's also another thing about free speech, because that would be a violation.
Well, I'm sure. Well, you know, based on my own experiences recently, I can't imagine that people weren't threatening violence on her.
Right.
You know, but it's also the people that are freaked out about it, because how dare she? I think a lot of these people forget the fact that, you know, there was people burning scarecrows of George Bush in effigy in the streets. There was the same type of things happening for Obama after he first got elected. There was people out there burning different things and using the justification that, well, they did this to George Bush, when everybody automatically claimed that they were just doing it because they were horrible racists. But this is like nothing new. So this is another one of those things that it's unbelievable that so many people get worked up over this.
It's really one of those things that should have been, oh, that's dumb, and kind of forgotten about.
Yeah. Here's some, you know, quasi-relevant, quote-unquote, comic.
Yeah.
Did a photo shoot and it had just happened to have the president's head in it. Okay, moving along now. You know.
Yeah. It's bad art that's trying to make a statement. Didn't really do so well. And she's not really a particularly good artist anyway. So, meh. Moving on.
Well, I guess, you know, maybe it was a slow news day. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to get moving along now and take another trip back to the market. We'll be back in the second hour with more fiends.
In which we will welcome Bill Fouche.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Peace Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So we are back for the second hour. I am Jeremy. I'm joined by Phil. What's going on, Phil?
Oh, not a whole lot. We're here to welcome Bill Fouche and Sundance.
Oh, that's right.
The second hour.
Fouche. Hello, Bill Fouche.
Bill Fouche. I identify as a Bill Fouche.
Yes, two of the wonderful stations that carry us, that join us for the second hour, and also Bill Fouche just happens to be the favorite town for all of us to say, because it just rolls off the tongue so nicely. So yes, welcome Bill Fouche. And
it really does. I'm gonna have to visit that place at some point.
Yeah,
just to say that I've been to Bill Fouche.
Yeah, I think it's going to become a necessity, a pilgrimage for all fiends at some point. So, or at least it should be, you know.
Yeah.
So we were talking in the last hour, among other things, the insanity of the news cycle and the things that become news. And the one thing we were talking about was the recent picture of Kathy Griffin holding a severed Donald Trump head that got everybody so freaked out. And I was just we were going to shift gears, but the one thing I saw as the break was ending is I just happened to hop on Facebook really quick, and I saw a meme that actually really hit home with me and kind of reinforced the other point I was making about the Covfefe kerfuffle, which was that people ignore the insanity that's going on to focus on this silliness, which, you know, having fun is one thing, but the meme about this was that, you know, people are all freaked out about somebody, although it was made to make fun of Kathy Griffin. It said some weird little boy holding a severed head, which is causing all this, you know, widespread panic. Meanwhile, you know, all these billions of dollars were just given to this country that is famous for beheading people, and and there's not much talk about that, you know. And but that's the kind of mentality that people have. Like that's where their focus is, which is why I think we're in the situation that we're in right now.
Oh yeah, yeah, really. The guy Trump was just over there visiting, getting a medal and everything, but let's focus on the fake head that Kathy Griffin is holding up. That's what we want to scream about, of course.
Exactly. It's like, oh man, like really, and that's why, you know, that's why, in my opinion, the Republicans, conservatives, the right, whatever, aren't any better than the left, because they make fun of these people for being snowflakes, and rightly so in a lot of situations, but then they act the same way, and they turn a blind eye to the horrible stuff. Although the left isn't much better in this regard either, because you know the anti-war left disappeared largely when Obama took office, and they haven't reappeared in great numbers as of yet. Some of them have, but so many people turn a blind eye to all this heart to this stuff, and they may question it temporarily, but because of the insanity of the news cycle, it gets swept under the rug really quickly, and then it's the shiny object that people focus on, like somebody holding a severed head, a fake severed head, or some politician essentially butt dialing in the middle of the night, and it becoming worldwide news, because those things are much more important than the reality of what we all live through.
Yeah.
So I found that very interesting. Like I said, you know, we were going to shift gears, but that, I saw that as we were heading back from break. I'm like, oh man, that just really drives it home for me. Exactly. There you go, right there. All this, you know, really bad stuff that you could be focused on, and not to, you know, again, not to only focus on the bad stuff and only be, you know, Debbie Downer, but, you know, these are realities that are out there right now, and they're kind of important, in my opinion. So why don't, you know, maybe more people should talk about these things than who's holding a fake severed head, or who's mistweeting in the middle of the night.
You know, and distractions are good to a certain extent. You know, I think there's value in distraction, but don't let the distractions completely overtake your being. Don't let those be the focus on your life. Because it's just that, it's a distraction. And if you let that be the focus of your life, then you're distracting yourself from what's important, what's actually going on. And you know what's going on? We have an immensely corrupt government basically working night and day to ruin everybody's lives. That's what's going on.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I'm not opposed to distractions. I have plenty of them in my own life that I turn to forget about the insanity from time to time. But it's more so that's how the news cycle works, and that's how it's designed. It's supposed to constantly distract you with more and more garbage, so you don't focus on the important things, because the media has long since been working alongside the government and covering up for it, rather than reporting on it, which is, you know, what its original intent was claimed to be, that's what its job was there to do, is to call out government on its misdeeds. But that flew out the window a long time ago. So these distractions, while they are necessary to keep yourself sane, and while they are, you know, while they can be fun for the larger number of people, that's all they see, is they bounce from distraction to distraction to distraction. And, you know, like I was saying in the first hour, that's my bigger concern with all this stuff like this. Not that it's, you know, not that you can't have fun with it. Sure, have fun with it. I mean, heck, I like making memes. I get content from stuff like this. I understand that. But it's more so the fact that this is what becomes the focus for the majority, and then the really important stuff is completely getting lost. And if anything else, it just turns people more apathetic to government, which in some instances is good, but in other instances it's not, because they just resign themselves to the fact that, well, yes, it is horrible, and it maybe, you know, maybe they come to the realization that it doesn't matter what, you know, who's in there, the left or the right, because it's all the same. But they give up rather than trying to make things any better for themselves or anybody else around them. And that's not that, you know, that doesn't get you any good, it gets you anywhere either, because the apathetic people just get steamrolled just as well. And government's quite happy for you to be apathetic with their existence. They would rather you be that than fighting against them in any capacity.
Yeah. And this is one of the instances where apathy really is cowardice.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because it's really one of those, I can't do anything about it. I know I can't do anything about it, so I'm not even going to try. Well, okay, maybe there is nothing you can do right now about it, but you can at least keep yourself informed, continue informing other people, and continue spreading the word of what exactly is going on, what might be some strategies to fix it, and maybe eventually there will be enough people so that something can be done about it. And that would be the ultimate goal, right? To ultimately do something to improve the state of humanity.
Well, I would like to think so. Happens to be one of my goals, but, you know, call me crazy. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and well, I mean, and I more than most people, I think, understand the whole world of apathy. I lived there for quite a long time.
Oh yeah, me too.
I get it. You know, it always, you know, what you were just saying though about how people just, you know, and how it becomes cowardice in that regard. It reminds me of, you know, talking to a couple people in the older generations when I discuss ideas like this with them. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I had a talk with my grandmother at one point. And after listening to everything I had to say, you know, talking about government and the problems that I saw with everything, she basically told me that she agreed with me, but, you know, she was too old at that point. And she, you know, said, there's nothing I can do anyway, and I'm going to die soon, so why bother? And, you know, when you reach a certain point, I can totally understand that. But that's the attitude that so many people take that unfortunately prolongs this whole system that humanity has lived under for so long, because just so many people just take that approach that it just, well, there's nothing I can do. And I'm going to die at some point soon anyway, so what's the point? You know, it's like not even thinking about, you know, okay, well, maybe not you. What about the other people in your life? What about your children, you know, maybe grandchildren, your family, your friends, other people that are still going to be in existence after you've passed on? Do you not care about them at all? That's interesting, because in so many other regards, especially people like that, or, you know, they talk about family in so many other regards. It's like, well, all right, why aren't you thinking about them then in this regard? You know, maybe you can't live to see it. You know, that's something I came to years ago, was the fact that I got depressed for a while when I finally realized that I probably wasn't going to get to see the type of freedom I wanted to see in my lifetime. But then I quickly got over that by realizing, well, that's okay, because a lot of us aren't going to see it. But if the ideas are that good, they should carry on, right? So if I don't get to see it, that's fine, but I still got to do something right now. Otherwise, the next generation is going to be that much further away from seeing it, you know, meaning like my kids. So if I want to give a freer world to my kids, I have to do everything in my power while I'm here, even if I don't get to see the results, because it's not really about me per se. It's about, you know, it's about the idea that I'm trying to further, you know, and I don't know, I guess... unfortunately, more people don't think in those terms, and it's unfortunate. Well, it is unfortunate. I think things would be a lot better if people did.
Absolutely.
And rant. We'll be back after this trip to the market.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Burf, burf.
So we're some more sad news today from the world of government. Thanks, government. Unfortunately, I'm sure the guys at Free Talk Live talked about this a lot, but and I know Michael would normally tell me, well, they usually cover this, but I can't let this one go by. Unfortunately, today, Ross Ulbricht, the alleged, you know, horrible mastermind behind that evil Silk Road website. Heavy on the sarcasm there, in case you weren't, wondering. Lost his final appeal today, as the, I guess it's the second appeals court, or however, I forget how the whole system works, because I really don't care, because it's all a big joke, unfortunately. They rejected his appeal, and I guess this is his last one. And they basically rejected every claim that his defense put forward, which is just horribly unfortunate, because what they did was essentially fine this man, put this man behind bars for the rest of his life on a thought crime, is essentially what it worked out to be, because he didn't harm anyone.
He did not sell any drugs. He did not take any sort of physical action against anybody, or despite their claims, what the case against them claimed, without actually making a case against him, without actually charging him for it. They claimed that he was part of a murder for hire scheme, which there was no real evidence for.
Well, yeah.
So he has not done any actual harm to anybody. The only thing he did was create a website that escaped government regulation. That's all. He created a website.
Yep. He worked outside the bounds of the what government says is okay. So that alone is enough to put him behind bars for the rest of his life. Which is, and that's a long time too. More likely than not, because Ross is he's kind of a young guy. I think he's your age, right? He's barely, or he might have just turned 30. Actually, I think.
Yeah, something he's younger like that. Than me.
Yeah, so it's horrible. And the one thing that really got me from this was part they had. I found in one of the articles I was reading about it was part of the opinion rendered by the court. And the three judge panel is how it works in these things. But this was from the opinion. It's a quote: reasonable people may and do disagree about the social utility of harsh sentences for the distribution of controlled substances, or even the criminal prohibition of their sale and use at all. It is very possible that at some future point, we will come to regard these policies as tragic mistakes and adopt less punitive and more effective methods of reducing the incidence and cost of drug use. At this point in our history, however, the democratically elected representatives of the people have opted for a policy of prohibition backed by severe punishment. Unquote. That made me sick to my stomach. That is the ultimate. I don't make the laws. I'm just enforcing them. I didn't make them. I'm just following orders. Like that. That is the ultimate. That just made me so nauseous to read that. That this is the opinion of these judges. Well, this is what they say. So, oh well. You know, even though most people will probably disagree.
Oh. Yeah, it's really, really despicable. This entire case is completely despicable.
Yeah, it's just, and like I had a chance to meet his mom, Ross's mom, Lynn Ulbricht, last year at Porkfest, and I know she's a friend of the show, and just such a wonderful woman, and she's just tried so hard to do everything for her son, and like, they weren't even she wasn't even an anarchist or anything, but it's like, she's got to see firsthand what the government can do to somebody who they view as a threat to not a threat to the public at large, but as somebody they view as a threat to their power structure. That is what the people who call themselves government can do to an individual that threatens that.
Yeah, and the thing about it is this sentencing, not only was it completely unfair, and not only did he not deserve it, but it didn't even do what it was set out to do, which was to discourage similar action from other actors. Because when he was locked up, a horde of other dark markets popped up in its stead.
You know,
it's absolutely ridiculous.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. You're special. You're better than those geeky nerds who use Android phones. They think they're so smart. But you're one of the beautiful people who has an iPhone. So the Freedom Fiends moved heaven and earth to make an iPhone app just for you. iPhone users are elite, and the Freedom Fiends know this, and we've handcrafted this artisanal app just for you. It's gorgeous, like you. And like you, it's functional and then some. The app is free, and it's called Freedom Reeducation Camp. Go to iTunes and get Freedom Reeducation Camp today, because you inspire joy feelings in everyone around you. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp. Spend some time today in Freedom Reeducation Camp. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp.
Murph, murph, murph. All right, Freedom Fiends, we are back. I'm Phil, and I'm here with Jeremy. And we're going to spend at least some of this segment talking about intersectionality. Now, wait, don't go. We're going to critique it. We're not going to be pushing some social justice agenda. This is something that came up because our friend Steve Miller posted on Facebook or Twitter, one of those tweet beefs things. Intersectionality is to progressives what the NAP is to libertarians. And I completely and utterly agree with him on this. He's totally right. It always comes up whenever you see a social justice article or anything like that. So we're going to try to define this as well as we can. So much like quite a few other concepts in the social justice paradigm, it's not all that well defined, but yeah, we're going to try our best. So intersectionality seems to be sort of a concept of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts issue. And it talks about how you have multiple dimensions of oppression, about how, you know, you've got your singular dimension of oppression, with how women are clearly clearly oppressed, and how various racial groups are clearly oppressed. But what if you're both a woman and you're black? Well, then you're on a totally different level of oppression, because you've got multidimensional oppression. And this seems to be this concept of intersectionality. And does that sound about right to you, Jeremy?
Yeah, as best as I can follow. I mean, I'm obviously one of those horrible pool lord cisgender males who, you know, who obviously doesn't know anything because this term escapes me.
yeah.
But yeah, right. That's basically what I've gotten out of it. I mean, I had heard this term thrown around, and I'd seen it in articles as well before this was brought to our attention today. But yeah, that's basically what I can get out of it, because I mean, according to the Wikipedia definition, that says a lot of that stuff in there too. And you know, I don't really understand it beyond that, but yeah, I think that covers it.
Yeah, well it's something that I actually recommend that anybody that is against the social justice movement or has critiques of the social justice movement sort of investigate and read up on, because it kind of, even just reading a little bit about the basics, kind of illuminates some of the behavior that you see in these social justice crowds and some of their quote unquote thought process. But the intersectionality thing has so it's about how you address these little oppressions. So they talk about how, well, you have statements in law and statements in policy and things like that that address oppression and discrimination that may occur for a specific sex or sexual orientation, or, you know, for maybe transgender people or race, but it doesn't really address the intersection of all of this. So it makes it where these intersectional identities are not protected and they're not properly addressed and whatnot. And it's all done in this sort of assumption that this has to be addressed by government or some sort of social entity like that. And it completely doesn't even bother to address the option of being colorblind and orientation blind and trans blind and just being, you know, treating these people as individuals, treating people as they come and as they behave towards you or in accordance to how they behave towards you. But it's all about legislating identity or legislating the behavior towards identity, towards certain identities. And of course, you have all sorts of intersections that need to be taken into account and need to be treated positively and need to be protected and whatnot. But there's one intersection that is conspicuously absent, which is, of course, as we've stated earlier, the white, heterosexual, cisgendered male. Because apparently we're on the top of the food chain as far as
Yes.
Well, and this totally explains the oppression Olympics too. How you have
oppression Olympics.
Yeah. How you have in the Occupy Wall Street, how you would have favoring of different oppression levels. So the oppression Olympics is essentially, well, this person takes precedence because they are a woman and they're oppressed. But wait, no, this person takes more precedence because they're transgendered. So they're even more oppressed than the woman. Oh, wait, now here's a person that's transgendered and black and in a wheelchair. So they have to take precedence. Otherwise you're ableist, transphobic, and racist. And that comes from this idea, or at least as far as I can tell, it comes from this idea of intersectionality.
Yeah, that sounds completely accurate, actually. Because it really, I mean, I scoff at the idea of the oppression Olympics, but that's really what it is. It's like, I am the most oppressed, you know, so they're trying to figure out who is the most oppressed and they have to like one up each other. But yeah, it's, and aside from, you know, the cisgendered white males not being in this list anywhere, of course, because, you know, we don't count and we are the oppressors. It's also, you know, the minority they often overlook the most is the biggest minority, which is the individual. And they never really care about that because they want to group everybody together. And that's all that this does. I mean, like you said, it's not a matter of just wanting these things. It's that they want to use the force of government to have these things imposed. And it's just a never-ending cycle. And especially if the more credence that's given to this idea, it really becomes never-ending because there are, like you said, there's constant intersections. So where does it end? And how many people are going to get to bludgeon each other with the force of government, like, before nobody's left standing because everybody's getting bludgeoned constantly because it's just, there's always some new group that's now being more oppressed. It's like, can't we just look at it that, you know, us plebs are all kind of getting oppressed by the system? And yes, some people may have it worse, but you know what? maybe if we get rid of the oppressive system rather than trying to use the oppressive system to hurt other people that you think are the cause of the problem, maybe we'll get a little further. I don't know.
Yeah. And I suspect this would also have give us a hint of why the left or why the social justice left loves to eat itself. How the different little factions in the social justice left kind of break off and love to accuse each other of this vitriolic racist, and you know, you don't believe in this theory or whatever, or you don't go along with this paradigm, so you're a racist and sexist and homophobic and blah blah blah. And I think part of that is because you have this idea of what really amounts to infinitely sliceable intersections of different gender and different, you know, identity as far as sexual orientation and race and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely seems that way.
Yeah. And this might be something that gets brought up again later, because James Weeks might actually have a little bit more to say about this. I just realized, I think he's a little bit more familiar with some of these topics, so he might have some valuable input later on this. But yeah, I mean, that's interesting. So there's a sentence here, and this is actually from the wiki. Intersectionality holds that the classical conceptualization of oppression within society, such as racism, sexism, classism, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, xenophobia, and belief-based bigotry, that probably does not include anti-Christian belief, but you know, whatever, do not act independently of each other. Instead, these forms of oppression interrelate, creating a system of oppression that reflects the intersection of multiple forms of discrimination.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Which is why it becomes never ending, because, you know, I think it's the last line from the introduction of it on the wiki is another one that just struck me. And, you know, I mean, say what you want about Wikipedia, but I think, again, this is fairly accurate and it makes sense to me, which is intersectionality is ambiguous and open-ended, which it clearly seems to be, because like you said, to start this all off, there isn't a real clear definition of it.
Yeah, well, that's so ambiguous and open-ended. There's actually an academic term for that, and it's not well defined.
Yes.
And if you are working in academia, that's like the first rule of theoretical concepts. You have to have a well-defined concept to create a theory off of. And this thing seems to be an entire theory based off of a completely non-well-defined concept. And one thing I forgot, you had mentioned earlier that, oh, it identifies all of these different minorities and to protect all of these different minorities, except it does not protect the smallest minority, as you said, the individual. Well, of course it doesn't, because it's rooted in Marxist feminist critical theory. So the entire idea is based on collectivist ideas. So yep. There is no room for the individual in this type of idea.
Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
I love the Freedom Fiends. But in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow, I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
To the story we have. So, a very awesome artist in New York City. Actually, he's kind of a, he has a little bit of a of leftist-ism in it, but it's forgivable because of what he did. So, ticked off artist, I'm actually not sure if you can say the word, but ticked off artist adds statue of urinating dog next to fearless girl. So, for those not in the know of what's happening on Wall Street, and by Wall Street I mean the actual street, so there's a famous bull statue on Wall Street in front of the Wall Street Exchange or the New York Stock Exchange, and it's supposed to sort of represent the bull market, and you know, it's all mean looking and whatnot. And apparently one of the stock market corporations, one of the big wigs in that area, decided to erect a new statue of a fearless girl standing in front of the bull, you know, just staring it down. And it was some kind of feminist statement, but it was totally a marketing gimmick. You know, it was a really obvious, just schlocky marketing gimmick. So an artist in New York, I already forgot his name. Alex Gardega decided to make his own little statue of a pug lifting its leg and whizzing on the girl's shoe. And it is so great. Yeah. And he even on top of that, he purposely made it a bad sculpture. He purposely made it kind of like a shoddy pug sculpture to make a statement of the bad art that's being foisted upon, you know, the passersby in the Wall Street area. So
yeah, I thought when I first saw the headline, I'm like, oh, this is great. And then when I read that, I'm like, oh, that's even better. Like, it's not even like he took a lot of time with this.
Right.
He literally just threw something together. And it's like, this is all this deserves. And, you know, the pictures of it are hysterical. There's people, you know, of course, there's everybody surrounding it and taking pictures. And it's you know, and of course it's got a lot of the feminists outraged, and how dare they? You know, even the guy who made the original bull sculpture was upset with the fact that they had that they put this other sculpture, the quote unquote fearless girl sculpture, like he was upset that they put that one in front of his sculpture in the first place. So yeah. It's like, okay, well, turnabout's fair play, folks. Like, you know, get over yourselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it was great. And it's so funny that the feminists are railing about it. It's, of course, they are. You know, anything you do that even remotely criticizes any female or any intersectionally minority person, well, you're guaranteed to be a misogynist or a racist or whatever. And of course, in this case, the girl is intersectional because not only is that sexism, it's ageism.
Oh, yes. I hadn't even thought about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, some of the quotes from this article just made me laugh too. One woman actually is apparently she kicked the dog. the dog statue, which she says she walked by like yelling at it, like, that was an a-hole move. You call this art? And she kicked the statue. Like, yeah, that's good, lady. Like, I wonder what he made. You know, I'm sure it looks like he made it out of something solid. So I'm sure she hurt herself in the process. That's even funnier. But again, you know, people with knee jerk reactions and stuff was something that kind of we were talking about earlier. People's ability to get distracted. But when people actually sit and listen, it's amazing what could happen. Because there's another quote from another woman who said that she actually once she listened to him explain it, she said, "I respect his opinion, and that's really cool." So it's like,
yeah. People want to go with their knee-jerk reaction, but, I mean, come on, think about it a little bit. Just think about it, listen to the story, talk to each other. Don't just scream over.
Yes. It's art, people. Not everybody's going to enjoy it. But, you know, don't have to get mad about it. Jeez.
Worms.